escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance and Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Hello and welcome to
Unspooled.
Top three. I'm Amy Nicholson.
And I am Paul Scheer. And we believe the best way to get to know someone is through the movies that they love. Top three is an exploration of people's three favorite films. It doesn't have to be the best, but it's some of their favorite stuff. And today we have an amazing, duo because they are husband and wife. And they have impeccable film taste. They also have an amazing podcast we'll talk about in 1 second. First, let me introduce actor, comedian, best-selling author, Patton Oswalt, and actress, podcaster, Meredith Salinger.
Hi.
Hello, hello. Thanks for having us.
I love you both as people, but I love your podcast because you're a married couple, that people know, but that you text each other in the house, right? And you text, and this is something that I experience with my wife. You know, we are feet away from each other communicating on text. And this idea for a podcast to me was just a genius idea. Like, how did it all come together for you to take your texts and make it into a show?
Well, I mean, all during the shutdown, Meredith kept saying we should do a podcast, and I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I didn't think we had an original angle into how do we talk about the world, how do we talk about things. And then just over the months of...
Is that what happened?
I kept shooting down.
I think it was more like, it was like the beginning of coronavirus and jobs got canceled. Like all his shows shut down. His tour was canceled. We're sitting at home. We're like, there's nothing going on. We should probably do a podcast. But because I came up with the idea, you were like, yeah, we'll see. And then like a year later, when coronavirus was on the end, he's like, that was a good idea. Let's do that. It wasn't we sat there pondering that
I wanted to ponder because I did, I wanted what is our angle into this? And then when I realized the amount of texting that we do, it's to the point where we have been lying in bed next to each other at night. And Meredith will find a perfect position, but that her back is to me. And if I want to show her something,
when you find the perfect position in bed.
Yeah, you got to stay in it. That's the way you have to be.
Our backs were to each other and we were in bed, but our backs were to each other. And he's on his phone and I'm on my phone. And he's like, I got to show you this. And he always wants to show me what he's looking at. So I always have to turn over and look. Yeah. And I was perfectly positioned. And I was just text it to me.
What was amazing was she would always struggle with that. She would try to turn and look at it. And then it finally got to that one night and she said it without shame. You're going to need to text that to me. I know that I'm 6 inches from you. You need to text it. 'Cause I'm not losing this position.
My gosh. I love it. Well, this is very similar. My wife and I, we have two kids and they sleep in bunk beds. And so given on the night, one of us will be in the top bunk, one will be in the bottom bunk, and we will be on text chains with like other like people, and we're having a full conversation. Like, we're just literally, I'm above her, she's above me. And it's like, I'm wondering, like, do people think that we are not even in the same room? Because we're reacting to things at different times based on, you know, like, we should be together here. We are right there. So, yeah.
Right.
But I do love this podcast. It's Did You Get My Text? And it's available wherever you get your podcast. But because, you know, I think that the most romantic thing you can do is text a picture to somebody who's only 6 inches away from you. We wanted to kind of talk to you about something that I feel like would be a little bit different than what we normally do top three. Top three, we let the world be your oyster, whatever movies you want. But we wanted to kind of isolate you both because I think you both are movie lovers and give you a little bit more of a challenge. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to do your top three romantic films, like the films that say love to you.
Okay, well, my first choice is kind of easy and obvious, and I'm sorry to any film buffs that are listening, but I'm picking 1964 as The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
The Umbrellas of Cherbourg from 1964, perhaps the epic musical romance of all time, written and directed by Jacques Demy and starring Catherine Deneuve, Nino Castelnuovo, Anne Vernon, and Marc Michel.
Classic.
It is, not only is it a classic, it is an experience. He recreates the giddiness of being in love because every single line of dialogue in this film is sung. Although it's not done as a musical, nobody breaks out into dance. People walk around and live their lives normally, but they sing everything to each other. And the colors and the look of the little town of Cherbourg and this young couple played by Catherine Deneuve, who has, I mean, she's always been gorgeous, but this was the movie that she exploded on the world like an A-bomb, basically. You cannot believe how gorgeous she is. And it is one of those, it's a very French romance in that it is about true love. And then it's about losing that love. And then it's about, they don't get back together. They look back fondly on this memory and they meet later, but they're not together anymore. And you see that kind of sadness of, why didn't this work out? Sometimes perfect love doesn't work out. And this movie nails it all so perfectly. And I can't stress to you that it happens while everyone is singing the dialogue and you're just completely tied into this movie.
I love this idea of a movie that also celebrates like a love that was right for the moment.
Yes.
Right. Like, you know, and that's something that I don't think that people talk about. I think it's always like, oh, it's forever. But it's like sometimes it's just for that year, that month, that weekend, that summer, yes, whatever it is. And it's, and I feel like we kind of poo-poo that because we want like that more traditional, like we met and it's then 90 years later. But I love that about this movie. And I will say that if you're a fan of Flight of the Conchords, they did a great episode that my wife is in that kind of pays a little bit of an homage to it with the umbrella
bicycle
spinning.
Bicycle riding?
They have bicycle riding. They do a whole little number all in French, like made up French. And it's so, so if you're a fan of Flight of the Conchords and you remember that bicycle riding, umbrella spinning.
I love that
date,
episode.
Such a great one.
You should watch Umbrellas of Cherbourg because it is, it's that episode, but for 90 minutes. And just the color scheme itself is amazing.
Were you able to open your heart up to La La Land in the same way, given that it kind of did so many homages to this film?
Yeah. I loved La La Land for what it was. And I was able to appreciate the nods that it was giving to stuff like American in Paris and Umbrellas of Cherbourg, and there were all these little touches, but this is the single malt whiskey, and La La Land is that single malt whiskey cut with Diet Coke. It's still tasty, but I want the pure single malt, and that's what this is.
I love the way that should be the tagline.
Yeah, but also it really has. It's like those movies like Baby, It's You or Annie Hall. That, like Paul said, it's about a romance that is perfect in a very specific time, and then one or both of the partners grows and changes, and they don't know why it doesn't work anymore. They're not worse people; they're just different people now. And I'm not doing it justice. I don't want to ruin it,
Seeing somebody that knowing look that you can capture where you have spent so much of your time with this person, or you had a moment with them, mm-hmm. and it's over, but yet there's still that connection there. I feel like that's what this movie kind of has too. It's a feeling, and I feel like it captures that so beautifully in this movie.
Oh. Yeah.
I feel like that idea of having that romance for a small period of time, and you know, like, I love the movie A Little Romance with Diane Lane.
Yes.
And Laurence Olivier. And that, I mean, they're young kids that fall in love, and Laurence Olivier sort of helps them on there. And I think from his perspective, looking at this young love, like, there's a nostalgia to him, like, this is for just this moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to help these two be in love. These two young kids, I don't know how old they are, like 13, 14, 15, 16, right. Something like that. But you know, this love story is only for this small time. To kiss under the bridge of sighs is only this one small captured moment in their lives. And I love that romance and the idea of it just being for that moment. It's kind of a love story. It's almost a nostalgic movie that Laurence Olivier is watching, you know, it's like, he's just watching a sweet moment of time.
And, you know, I've been talking about this a lot, and this is not exactly a love story, but it reminded me of this movie a little bit, is Annette, because of all the dialogue, singing dialogue through the whole, yeah. It's just something that's so different. And obviously the love of that is such a bizarre, but especially in the beginning, there's more of that, but I just love when you play with the form in a different way. It's not just a traditional musical. There's casual conversations here that are being sung. It's this, like, you know, you're just seeing this very, I don't know. It's really, it has to be seen. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. I love this. This is a great first pick, a great way to get into it. And we were saying before it got started, we were talking about this idea, like, sometimes I think romantic films get a bad rap, but they're bad everything. So there's bad action movies, there are bad superhero movies, but romantic films seem to hold the weight of their worst one.
Oh boy, they really, yeah, that's the one where the flavor of a bad one taints the entire batch, and it's not fair, because there are some brilliant human films in that genre that deserve as much attention as any other genre.
I feel like, for whatever reason, like, sometimes, like, if you say, like, romantic comedy, romance movie, I don't know why How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days comes up. I don't think I've ever seen it, but, like, that image, or, like, it's like, that's what it's indicative of. I know there are ones that I love so much more, but it's like, I feel like it's the way that some people just go to Carrot Top. It's like, oh, I'm going to make a joke about Carrot. It's like something becomes, like, representative of such. It's like, that's not the thing. But yeah.
It made me want to protect that Sandra Bullock, Channing Tatum movie that just came out, The Lost City. Because I don't think we've had, like, a big budget studio romantic comedy in theaters in a decade, maybe. Mm-hmm. It might be a full on decade. And we got one. So I was like, huzzah.
You're right. I think The Lost City, and then what was the last big, I think, like, Hitch was the last big budget.
Well, like, I think Long Shot. Right? Long Shot, like Long Shot with Seth and Charlize. I mean,
Yeah.
But that's like, but like, this idea of, like, also, like, a big complicated thing. I feel like, you know, like the Michael Douglas movies, you know, Jewel of the Nile.
Romancing the Stone.
Like, yeah. Kind of like adventure ones, traveling.
Something that felt bigger than people just falling in love. You know, it's like this idea. I love those kind of things.
Yeah.
All right. So, sorry, Meredith, what is your pick here?
Well, I have three great ones, but I just wanted to bring up one that's sort of out of the box. Like, you were saying, like, why did How to Lose a Man in 10 Days, or whatever the one you just said was, that one.
Yeah.
That's the thing. But, like, the idea of romance and love, and I would say the movie Midnight Run, first of all, is my favorite film ever.
It's one of the best.
Midnight Run from 1988. It is an all-time buddy comedy starring Robert De Niro as a bail bondsman tasked to drive mob accountant Charles Grodin from New York to Los Angeles. Midnight Run is directed by the Martin Brest of Beverly Hills Cop, Scent of a Woman, and Geely, starring newlyweds Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez, proving that nobody knows a better formula for chemistry than Brest.
From
definitely has all the elements of a romantic comedy, but it's between Robert De Niro and Charles Grodin. Like the love that's the two, and I don't mean falling in love romantically. I mean, like actually end up loving each other at the end of this, where they, you know, the typical romantic comedy sort of starts out like, I hate you. You're annoying. Right. Like, it's always like they don't like each other at the beginning. Usually they hate each other and then they fall in love slowly. And in Midnight Run, it's sort of the same thing. Like it starts out with this very, I'm bringing you in, you know, there's a hate that he doesn't want to be with him. And through the course of their like Planes, Trains and Automobiles, story to get to the very end of the movie. And they're like best friends and he falls, you know, Robert De Niro's like, I'm going to let you go. I'm not going to give you to the cops. I'm going to let you go. And that's like the most love you could ever give someone is their freedom. And because you really actually care about them. And it's not a romantic comedy. It's a comedy and it's not romantic love, but it is love. And it is, it's one of my favorite films of all time. And I really do think it fits in with this.
I love that. And by the way, you know, when you're saying that, I think I feel that same way about Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, because that heart, you know, it's you feel these moments. And I think you're right. You can have those same feelings of connecting to people. It doesn't always have to be romantic. It doesn't have to be like.
Right. But if you're if it's going to be romance, like real romance, you know, love, romantic romance, Smokey and the Bandit, number one.
Smokey and the Bandit from 1977, directed by Hal Needham and starring Burt Reynolds and Sally Field. They're in a Trans Am, they're on the run, they're having fun, and Sally Field and Burt Reynolds start dating on this movie after meeting on set.
Sally Field and Burt Reynolds, the relationship between the two of them, the chemistry is so incredible. It's just, it's also... First of all, it's the reason why I became an actress, because when I saw that movie, I was like, Sally Field, that's what I want to be. That's what I want to do. Yeah. But just like, and they're crazy adventures, but they didn't start out like hating each other. It was sort of like in awe, like, what is this person? You know, he looks at her like, you're this crazy woman who just is wearing a wedding dress. You're like jumping around like a frog in my car. They're just like so drawn to each other.
I have grown to have such an appreciation for Burt Reynolds.
I love him so much.
Such a movie star.
White Lightning, Gator.
Yes.
Like these movies, like you're like, oh, I get it. I get
charming.
Why this.
No one is more charming. No one has more charisma.
He's one of those actors like Halle Berry or Will Smith, where he's almost so charming. They're almost too charming for their own good. That you'd forget that, oh no, they can act, but they're just such movie stars before they're actors.
Yeah.
It's like they have to struggle to get some respectability because it seems so effortless for them. And in a way it is, they're just born to be movie stars. It's not their fault. It's just how they look.
Yeah.
It's not your fault you're a movie star. Don't worry about it. you don't have to cry. You're a movie star. Chin up.
You look at young Burt Reynolds, especially like you said in Gator and White Lightning, you're like, the dude is just the most natural person in front of a camera. You can't take your eyes off.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying. Like, sometimes I look at that old Cosmo spread of him on the rug, and I'm just startled that he was like a man who existed on this earth. Like, I'm just startled that we were given him. I'm glad he found a camera.
Cheeky, too. Like, he was hot and sexy, but like, he was cheeky about it. He wasn't trying to be hot and sexy. Like, all the people on like the CW, those guys in those shows, like, you know, the OC or whatever, they're trying so hard to be sexy. But Burt Reynolds just was like laughing. He was best friends with Dom DeLuise, for Christ's sakes. Yeah. I mean, they had like this laughable charm to them. They didn't take themselves so seriously. And yet that like smile, that laugh that he has is so enticing.
Amy, you brought up the Cosmo centerfold. Like, his expression in that photo is, can you fucking believe it?
Playboy centerfold.
He looks like he's cracking up.
I know, and it's that twinkle. It's that twinkle in his eye that just makes it even better. I mean, I'm a Best Little Whorehouse in Texas girl. Mm. And like, to me, that's just the ultimate.
I just saw that. I just saw that too.
And I thought, specimens like going just dominating a room together.
So good. It's so interesting. And we just talked about Boogie Nights on the show. And the fact that performance is so wonderful and that he hated it is such a conflicting thing. It's like,
Yeah.
Like you nailed it. Like, you are a good actor too. You got this amazing part. It's nuanced and subtle, and you're so good, and you give away your awards because you hated it. Like,
but if you watch early stuff like Deliverance, and even there's scenes in Gator when he confronts the young prostitute, he's like, how old are you? Like, he can act when he wants to. He's doing some complicated, and especially stuff like Seamus and God, I'm blanking on some of the
Sharky's Machine, or like,
he could act and do as an actor. Yeah.
Serious, scary. Like, it's like, yeah. Like, did you play these like heavy parts? Oh, I love where this conversation is going.
I know. Although I have to say, like, in my head right now, I'm kind of combining this like ultimate Frankenstein romantic comedy that is a Burt Reynolds movie where at the end of the movie they don't wind up together and they sort of think we had a moment. I want to just mash all these together and create like the ultimate romance.
Wow, you're right. That we're doing that, like the way that Eli Wallach assembles his gun in Good, the Bad, the Ugly, taking all the best parts and slapping it together.
And Meredith, I just want to say, like, I do think that people probably won't reach for Smoking the Bandit, and they should, because it is one of those movies that is what you said, like the romance in it is so fun. It feels so. I think it is another movie that I found later in life. I didn't find it earlier. And I think, again, if you like a Danny McBride kind of a thing, it has elements of that, because it's very much a Southern movie, you know, and oh, my gosh, I'm forgetting his name, too. Jerry, his
Jerry
partner.
Reed.
Yeah, Jerry
Snowman.
Reed. Oh, so much good stuff in that movie.
I got into that movie really, really young. And what I remembered is all the car chases and the jumps and Jackie Gleason going, you dumb bitch. But I watched it again a few months ago. There are long improvised scenes when Bert and Sally are just driving and they're talking about Stephen Sondheim musicals. Like,
whoa, I don't remember that.
Yes, I swear to God. It's like suddenly you're watching a mumblecore film from the 90s. They're just talking and it has nothing to do with the plot. You're like, and they're so charming together. You can tell that Hal Needham was like, I'm using all this footage. This is fantastic.
Oh, I love that.
Sometimes it takes a killer to catch a killer. Don't miss the return of the hit Paramount Plus original series, Criminal Minds Evolution. Buried secrets come to light in the new season as the criminal profilers join forces with an unlikely ally to solve a deadly mystery. As conspiracies mount, the team faces their biggest threat yet. Stream the new season of Criminal Minds Evolution on June 6th, exclusively on Paramount Plus. Head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday, and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion, and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling, and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic, 'cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
These are so far amazing choices. I love Midnight Run and Smoking the Bandit in the mix. These are great. What do we got next? Anything else? Yeah.
My second pick is 1981's Modern Romance, Albert Brooks. Mm.
Modern Romance from 1981, directed by Albert Brooks, co-written by Brooks and Monica Johnson. This movie stars himself. He stars in all his best films with Catherine Harold and Bruno Kirby.
Is another great film about a couple that is to together. They're in love. They break up. They get back together. And even at the end, you can tell, like, they're just stuck in this weird orbit of dysfunction. But it's so funny and real. There are so many scenes in that movie about it's almost like Albert Brooks is like, what if the two people in the Umbrellas of Cherbourg weren't mature and were actually assholes and couldn't deal with losing love and kept crying back into it? And it's also very realistic, even though it's very cynical. And it has some of the funniest scenes in a comedy I've ever seen.
I think Albert Brooks is one of those, again, as we get older, sometimes I feel like people forget certain names. And Albert Brooks has been somebody who, the movies that he's made are really timeless. I'm thinking about, is it Lost in America, the one where it's the reality? There's so many things where he was ahead of the curve. Lost in America is not the reality one, but it's a
Real Life.
Real Life, yes.
Real Life completely predicted reality. It is scary, the things he got right in that film. He and James Brooks.
And then Defending Your Life, too.
Yes, and Defending Your Life is another one that is like, I think, sets the bar for what we envision, or that version of like a more corporate heaven this movie. I saw this one again recently, and it's I love this movie. And it also feels, and maybe this is just like, I feel like it's very much Albert Brooks. I mean, it's like I don't know how much, like, it's like, this is what he's wrestling with. This is very much we're watching him. I think that's why he's so fantastic in this movie, too.
Well, I have a weird theory about Albert Brooks, in that if you watch Real Life and True Romance, Lost in America, and then Defending Your Life, that is the process of Albert Brooks kind of working out all of his demons and kinks. And at the end of Defending Your Life, he actually becomes fully realized and fully actualized. And the movies that followed it aren't that good, because now he's not tormented anymore and doesn't have great material to deal with. At the end of Defending Your Life, when he's on that tram and he goes off into the future with Meryl Streep, and he's actually, so you're like, that's kind of the end of Albert Brooks, because he filmed himself getting over all the things that made him funny. It's amazing that he did it.
Oh, wow.
No.
I really love that.
I don't want to believe that artists have to be troubled, but that's a compelling argument.
In this case, it might be true.
Oh, Pat, and that's a terrible thing to say, because once we got married and you were like, I'm so happy. And you went on all these talk shows and everyone's like, you're so happy now. And then you're like, I know, is that the death of my comedy?
Yeah.
Like,
you can find other.
I will promise I'll make you miserable so that you can be funny again.
Oh, my gosh. I love that. I love that idea.
Oh, have you heard that story that Stanley Kubrick went up to Albert Brooks and he was like, I love Modern Romance. How did you make this movie? I've always wanted to make a movie about jealousy.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would retire after that. If Stanley Kubrick said, you made a movie that I always wanted to make, I'm like, well, I'm done. I did it.
He said it was about jealousy.
It is about jealousy, but it's about how two people have fooled themselves into thinking that love is jealousy. If they're not feeling jealousy, then they're not in love with each other. So they keep going. And I don't want to spoil a lot of the comedic surprises, but there's a classic sequence where he's broken up with her. So he's trying to get himself in shape again. And every store he goes into, he's like, I just broke up with my girlfriend, so I need some new vitamins. And the guy immediately starts going, oh, well, then you're going to need, like, as if that's a thing that people know.
I also just want to shout out somebody who I think does a great job with this movie, too. It's like Bruno Kirby, an underrated kind of another person who, you know, you may know him from City Slickers or When Harry Met Sally, but just around just always solidly great performances and, you know, just a really, like, I love when he pops up and stuff, and everything. Just want to shout out Bruno Kirby. He's a little.
I showed Meredith Godfather and Godfather Part 2 last year, and watching Bruno Kirby as a young Clemenza, because you're used to Bruno Kirby as this fun, comedic character, and he's kind of funny in the movie, but then he suddenly is ready just to quietly blow a guy's head off. You're like, he's a young gangster. Oh my God! Like, he was such an amazing actor.
Really, really good. And to have I feel like one of those guys who I think really could transform in different things and play broad. I mean, to be in broad comedies too, like City Slickers, it's like, that's like the most mainstream big movie, and hold his own with, you know, it's great in that.
Yeah.
I mean, is the Muppet movie considered a romantic comedy?
If you want to make it.
The Muppet movie, 1979. It's a musical. It's a road trip. It is a romance as the Muppets go across the country to Los Angeles. Directed by James Frawley and starring, of course, Jim Henson, Frank Oz, and a huge cast as all of the Muppets, as well as other humans we love. Bob Hope, Madeline Kahn, Carol Kane, Cloris Leachman, Steve Martin, Richard Pryor, Telly Savalas, and even Orson Welles.
Again, there's another thing between Fozzie and Kermit. You know, they're best friends. They're like, it's not just, you know, Kermit and Miss Piggy. It's the whole company for each other. Is it a romantic comedy? I don't know. But, you know, the dog with his romance talks with Kermit. They have this very intense talk about, you know, women. You can't live with them. You can't live without them. There's something irresistible-ish about them. Oh. You do not know that song? Like my favorite movie also, the Muppet movie.
But I'm saying, you know, what you're saying, I think, Meredith, is which I don't think we think about a lot in when we talk about romantic comedies is like the friendship element of it, right? Because that's the most important thing. Like a good romance, a good relationship really is rooted in this is my best friend. And it also happens to be the person that I'm spending my life with. But and that, I think, is what is so I think when we talked before about like how rom-coms can be this thing of like, oh, it's like you got to fall in love in 5 days or you'll turn back into, you know, the nerdy secretary, whatever it is. You know, it's like we get so caught up in that. But the truth is like the ones that last are these things that we want is like we want these great relationships, these best friends, people who support you and get you through things. And it's not just a game to win. And I think that that's why I always love Harry Met Sally, because it's like you watch an evolution of a friendship, romantic relationship. And I think that's exactly what it is.
It's an evolution of a friendship and how you become best friend, how you fall in love with the other person, even as a friend. Like you're just like enamored of their talent or their personality or how they make you feel or that they're supporting you in whatever endeavor you're about to go on. And that they've got your back and all these things, it feels romantic to me that fall into caring.
I also think that like what I love about the Muppet movie and talking about like the idea of these friends is you have Frank Oz and Jim Henson who were very good friends who are looking at each other almost, or, you know, I guess looking at monitors, but they're improvising. Like, I mean, you see the camera test for the original Muppet movie. Ooh. This is like that relationship is, you know, that's all from them. It's such an interesting, again, like a very different way of doing a full movie that feels, again, these characters are realized. They're not like a lot of the kids movies that you can watch now that don't feel like they have that connection, you know?
Rainbow connection.
I sang it many a time. That was always punny, right?
That was delightful.
Yeah. Meredith, I do have to ask though. I mean, like you have, I want to tap into your expertise as a person who's like a degree in psychology from Harvard. Do you think that Miss Piggy is in a healthy relationship with Kermit?
Ooh, good question.
I think Miss Piggy is who she is all the time, and she loves as much as she can. I think she does love him. I think she admires him as like the good person he is, but she's just very self-centered. And I think Kermit loves her knowing the kind of person she is and allows her to be her true self. Just sort of like, you know, Pat, and we were talking about this the other day with Natasha Leggero and her husband, and how guys have these wives who sort of like to be the center of attention. Well, I would say Paul too.
My wife does not like to. These, yeah, she's she will be there, but
be the center of attention. Yeah. But just that they shine. Mm-hmm. You have a wife who shines.
She shines,
and who's a sparkly personality, and like she's captivating. And it seems, and then there's all these like very sweet men behind these kind of bold women, and Kermit is sort of like that, and you know, that he allows Miss Piggy to be who she is and still loves her for all these intricacy.
I like that. But do you think that like Miss Piggy is saying to Kermit, like, get out of your own head, because there is something about, like, he's so worried about the show. He's so worried about trying to do everything. She's like, no, just connect to me. You know, like, I feel like he seems to be, you know, she's trying to make him present in the moment. Maybe that's how we should be looking at
it. Maybe bring him out of his worry and just into, like, be free about it. And
yeah.
Yeah. But it does seem like those things, you know, it's like that strong woman, kind man. It's like, oh, but Michelle is a strong, strong woman. And Barack is like, I mean, when I think of Barack Obama, I think of Kermit. They're like the same person. He's like the manly embodiment of goodness and wonderfulness. And I just think when they're different personalities like that, and yet they respect each other for who they are, it's kind of amazing.
I love that we're having this deep psychological discussion about a pair of felt puppets, but
deeper than that.
But no, but what I'm saying is that shows you the amount of work and humanity that went into these characters. I remember watching Siskel and Ebert talking about The Muppets Take Manhattan, and they were talking about how Miss Piggy in The Muppet Show was not as sure of herself as a movie star as she is in The Muppets Take Manhattan, that she's changed and grown. And then it's either Siskel or Ebert had to go, you know, we're talking about puppets. Like that's the beauty of these characters is that you forget that they're puppets and you really get into their stories. And it's kind of miraculous that it just, that's the genius of Jim Henson and Frank Oz and all the people that did the voices on that show. They created fully dimensional characters.
And you could watch them interact with humans and not feel like they were not equal, right? Like it's
Paul,
like you watch
Patton
Charles
and
Durning.
Patton and I had the most wonderful opportunity, and we went to Sesame Street on the 1 month anniversary of our wedding. 1 month we'd been married, and we went to Sesame Street.
Well, anyway, no, but we walked onto the set of Sesame Street, and Meredith was holding it together. But then she turned, and Big Bird was standing there, and she burst into tears. And one of the puppeteers immediately had a box of tissues. And they're like, "That's what happens when people walk on the set." Like, we were just used to people losing it.
But when we were talking about how the characters are so real that when they interact with people, we happened to be on set and we were talking directly with Grover and Cookie Monster and the Grouch. We were talking to them. And you do talk to them. Like, you look down and you can see the person with the puppet and then you start talking to the character and you forget that person even exists. They're not there. And you're like face to face. And I was in tears. I was like, I love you so much. I'm sorry. I'm like this. Oh, what happens all the time. Like they were talking to me and it was the greatest moment of my life. It was the best day of my life I've ever had in my entire life was meeting all the characters.
I have had similar experiences. My cousin is actually works for Jim Henson now and is amazing. And the work that he does there. And I get like, he gets to do it with my kids every now and then, but I brought my kids on Sesame Street and they're doing this in front of the kids and you can see the bodies and everything is zoned out. And I was like, oh, that's so cute. And then it happened to me because I was doing a bit with Waldorf and Statler and all of a sudden I'm doing this bit with Waldorf and Statler and they are they're kind of complaining. They're like, oh, you remember the Dark Crystal? Oh God, that was the, you know, they were complaining about how the puppets were hard to maneuver, but fully in character, having like, it was like, I'm watching these two old guys having this like, oh yeah, but I mean, great experience. But I mean that those beaks and the things, but they were as Waldorf and Statler having, and I was like, this is unreal.
Tell me you'd ever met Waldorf and Statler. They're my icons.
Oh, they are the best. It was, we asked for them and they came and they were everything that you wanted them to be. And they were also puppeted by two gentlemen who have been doing it for a very, very long time. So that's the best part of it too.
There was a Martha Stewart Christmas special on CBS one time and Miss Piggy was one of the guests and it's Frank Oz doing Miss Piggy and he clearly goes off script and just starts commenting on all that kind of Martha's obsessive compulsiveness and trying to like steal some of her equipment. And Martha is losing it. She's laughing so hard. And you hear the crew laughing. It felt like one of those guests who kind of gets out of control and takes over the show. And it's great. It's great footage, but it's a puppet. Oh, it's amazing.
I love this.
I just have one more.
Yeah. Okay, great. Perfect. Great.
My last one is a movie that came out in 2015 and did not get any attention. I don't know why. It's a movie called Sleeping with Other People.
Oh, yes.
Sleeping with Other People from 2015, written and directed by Leslie Headland, starring everybody. Jason Sudeikis, Allison Brie, Adam Scott, a guy named Manzoukas, I don't know him, Natasha Lyonne, Adam Brody, and Amanda Peet.
One of the most realistic modern romantic comedies about you falling. It's almost like a more modern version of When Harry Met Sally, of two people that are like, I'm just cool being friends, and they're both hooking up with other people, but then slowly start falling in love with each other. And then I don't want to spoil a lot of the surprises, but it is just an absolutely amazing film. Jason Manzoukas is
Jason. I've heard of that guy. It's one of the best. I've heard of him. I've heard some things. I will say this cast is like really a who's who. I mean, you have it's Sudeikis, Allison Brie, Adam Scott, Catherine Waterston, Manzoukas, Andrea Savage, Natasha Lyonne, Adam Brody, Billy Eichner. It's Amanda Peet. And Leslie is one of my favorite people. She is a great director and a writer. She co-created Russian Doll with Natasha Lyonne. And she right now is on a top secret Lucasfilm project. As one of the biggest Star Wars fans I've ever met in my life. But also can tap into this and directed some Black Monday. She's just, I love her and I think she's a great director. And this movie, you're right, I think this suffered from fatigue of mumblecore. People just assumed it was going to be that. And I feel like it had a poster that looked like that. We've seen Amelia. Hey, it's people sitting on a stoop or whatever it is.
And also the title is so immediately forgettable. It's like the title that I was making fun of. Like so many romantic comedies have that, getting kind of silly or just like, it's just a bunch of words. And if they'd given it a different title, cause it's a really amazing story and so well acted.
Yes, it really, really is good. And, Leslie comes from the playwriting background. So I think that she's really got character and dialogue. It's something you should definitely go back and seek out. It's one of these movies. I was talking to Zooks about this. There are a couple of these films, I think, that you start to call them plane films because it's like, well, I don't know if I want to waste my time at home watching this. And then you see on the plane, oh, that's an interesting cast. And you watch it. And then you all of a sudden are weeping on a plane because you're like, oh, this got me in a way that I didn't know. And Jason's like, the majority of people who saw Sleeping with Other People saw it on planes. I got millions of, because just is sitting there. And I think that it's interesting that the one thing that we always are looking for, love and validation and this connection to our friends and our life, it's like we put off, is it worth it to sit home and watch this? I should be watching James Bond or this.
Yeah.
And something like this it really sticks with you so much longer. I
watched it in a hotel room and it was because I was bored and I went through all the movies.
Right.
And I decided them. And then that one came up. I'm like, well, I know half these. These are my, I'll watch my friends do something. And then 10 minutes into it, I was completely hooked. And I'm like, this movie's fucking great.
I know. It's like, and I think people just got burned by an amount of movies that looked the same poster wise. And that's the fault of marketing. That is, that has nothing to do with the movie. But this is premiered at Sundance and, just so, so good and got great reviews. Meredith, do you want to end us up on anything?
Take us home, Meredith.
Yeah.
I said Muppet movie, and as long as that's in here, I'm happy.
All right, both of you had amazing. This is great. Amy, we have a bunch of great films here. I mean, we have everything from the Muppet movie to the Umbrellas of Cherbourg. You can't go wrong. I mean, I feel like this is a week's worth of great watching right here.
My heart is full. I have bitmojis for this occasion of what I'm feeling right now. Lots of cartoons of me holding mini hearts or hearts with muscles or cakes that look like hearts.
And I just want to remind people that the podcast is called Did You Get My Text with Meredith and Patton. It's available wherever you get your podcasts. And what has been the most fun for you to now be doing? Now you've done it for a while. What has been the most fun to take your actual text and now bring it into a podcast? And do you feel like now are you saving things in your text messages to bring to the show?
I'm definitely thinking more in terms of, is this something we can talk about? Or is this a topic that will sustain? But the most fun is when I send her a text or something to talk about, and then she responds to it from an angle or a perspective that I didn't see coming. That is never not great and entertaining for me, and I love it. I love it.
It is. It's such a treat, and I feel like anyone who has texted while you're sitting on the couch, texted your partner while you're sitting on the couch next to them, in the same room, in the same house. This is where we are. We're in this world, you know. And sometimes there is June and I could be laughing in bed, sitting side by side, and it's like we are connecting, even though we are looking at a screen. But I think that there's something to be said for that. I love it all, Meredith Patton. Thank you so much for being here, and
Thanks, guys, for having us.
This is so fun. You're so funny and great, and this is awesome.
These were such great picks.
Thank you, Patton and Meredith. Great choices. I cannot wait to dig back into that. It actually made me happy talking about these movies. Well, that is all for top three. If you have ideas for guests or maybe even different segments that we could do on this show to celebrate movies like this, join our Discord at discord.gg/Paul Scheer. There's an entire Unspooled section waiting for you to jump in. It's free. And I have to say, it's a beautiful community. We'll see you next time for Unspooled Top Three.
Escape to Ocean City, Maryland, and discover a place that just feels lighter, where every day feels like Saturday and French fries are a food group, where flip-flops are always in fashion and seafood is always in season, where the boardwalk is bustling and the beach is right outside your door, where you can rise with the tide and feel like a kid again. Ocean City, Maryland, somewhere to smile about. Book your trip at OCOcean.com.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.